This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, halfway through the program, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. 2 weeks from today, the Jets and the Flames, they'll do battle. They'll open up the play-in series against one another. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined, not in studio, but in Dave Minuk's living room. He's here, too. Ezra Ginsberg's also with us. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us here via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media, he is their national hockey writer. He's one of our very good friends, one of our all-time guests on this fine program. We're pleased to welcome back Michael Trakos. Michael, how are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Doing very well, Michael. We are
hanging out in Dave M's living room here.
Yes, and we are fit to perform, which is nice. We're not currently unable to perform or whatever the ridiculous turn of phrase the NHL is insisting be used by the media and their coaching staff and everybody else when describing a player who's not currently on the ice. Michael, I want to start with that with you. You wrote a great column earlier this week about that. Is the NHL just making this to be more absurd than it really needs to be by instituting this bizarre new rule when it comes to injury reporting?
Well, it was always troublesome to begin with. Like, upper body, lower body didn't really give you any indication, and fans were kind of left to figure it out for themselves. And now with the whole fit to participate or fit to play, it just adds another wrinkle. I think there's going to be a lot of people guessing, okay, this guy definitely has COVID. That's what the code is, unless his we see him walking around in a walking boot or a cast of some sort. So I know that players' privacy is a big deal, and I'm not going to dismiss that. But at the same time, you know, these guys are professionals, and I think fans really want to know who's in the lineup, who's out of lineup, how long are they out for. And all this is going to do is just cause a lot of speculation that probably is going to add, you know, more drama and unnecessary drama than they need.
Well, to your point, Michael, I don't think any fans are going to be surprised if there's positive COVID tests within the bubble. I mean, you're playing in a global pandemic. It's to be expected. The NHL, the Players Association, have decided that the risk is one worth taking. And you can certainly make an argument that they shouldn't be playing at all, and those arguments have been made ad nauseum. But the decision is the decision, and they're moving on with it. So why the secrecy? Why, hiding what is in plain sight and everyone expects to happen, if the NHL was so confident in their return-to-play protocol?
Honestly, if I was a conspiracy theorist, and I guess part of me is a conspiracy theorist, I would just guess that, this is the NHL trying to save face and trying to go on with the show. And, even if there's going to be one, two, or multiple COVID tests. And we know that you can be in a bubble and you can say it's as safe can be, but all it takes is for one outside worker to kind of pass through and, infect everyone. And we could have a pandemic on your hand. And, that's why I think that the NHL should be open. If I was a player, I'd like to know that, the guy I'm lining up against in the faceoff circle might have tested positive, or someone on his team might have tested positive. If I'm Max Domi and I'm diabetic, I'm already taking a huge risk in playing in this expanded postseason. And now you're just adding another layer where, I think players should know who else has it. And, as someone who lives in Toronto or someone who lives in Edmonton, I'd want to know, are we talking about 30 people inside this bubble might have it and might be passing it on to one another? And what happens if it gets outside that bubble? And there's a lot of ramifications in this regard.
Mike, just one more question in regards to the injury disclosure policy. Then obviously we want to get into, previewing the play-in round and the round-robin portion of the return to play. But, Caleb Jones came out within the last 48 hours and, admitted that he did test positive for COVID-19, and that's why he wasn't able to proceed with phase three of Edmonton Oilers' return to play. But are you expecting more players here in the coming weeks, leading up to the return to play, and once the play-in round starts and the first round and so on, do you expect more players to admit they've tested positive, or do you think the NHL is hoping that, less players, as opposed to more players, admit that they've tested positive for the virus?
Honestly, I don't know what the secrecy is. I don't think there's a stigma attached to getting the coronavirus. It doesn't mean that you're up to no good or that you weren't following rules by any stretch. I think we're at the point now where we all know someone who's been affected or know someone who knows someone who's been affected. Like I said, there's no stigma. There's thousands, if not millions, or like hundreds of thousands of cases right now of people with the virus. And I was talking to Austin Matthews this week, and when he was flat out asked if he did test positive, he didn't like sheepishly say, yeah, I did. He was just up front and said, yeah, I don't know where I got it. Can't pinpoint the location. He was asymptomatic, and let's move on kind of thing. So, I almost think that Matthew's doing that. He almost becomes a poster boy for saying, you know what? Yeah, you can get it. You can maybe you might be out for a couple weeks, but after that you're back to normal, and if anything, you're more immune to it. So, like I said, I don't know what the whole secrecy or what the danger is in announcing that you might have it. If anything, it might just bring more awareness to the fact that while this is a scary disease, it doesn't mean that it's going to ruin your NHL career or you might die from it. If anything, you just might be out a couple weeks. If anything, it might be better. The ramifications are less than if you get a concussion.
Michael, I'm not going to preface this question by saying that you're on a Winnipeg radio station, but obviously the Vezina finalists were announced yesterday. In your mind, who do you think is going to be taking that home, and why?
Oh, I think this is Connor Hellebuyck's trophy. The Norris is tight, the Calder is tight, even the Hart trophy. You can make an argument maybe for a guy like Artemi Panarin, but when you look at the Winnipeg Jets season, it's hard to imagine this team being anywhere close to where they are in the standings with a Hellebuyck. Faced the most amount of rubber, turned away most of the shots that he faced, obviously. He was their MVP from start to finish, so really deserving. At the same time, I was really shocked that a guy like Jacob Markstrom in Vancouver wasn't amongst the three finalists. Again, if you look at that team and how inexperienced that blue line was with the amount of minutes that Quinn Hughes was playing, you could really make a case that Markstrom maybe should have been at least the runner-up in that regard. But the GMs vote on this, not the writers, so I'll blame the GMs for maybe getting the top three wrong. But hopefully they got the number one right, because, I can't imagine anyone else other than Hellebuyck getting it.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael, of course, is the national hockey writer for Post Media. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Michael, we're 2 weeks away from the start of the play-in series games. Is there one series that intrigues you more than the others? I mean, obviously the matchups are unique in that they're not necessarily within division like we've been used to since the NHL returned to that playoff format. So of the play-in series, is there one that you find to be more unique than maybe some of the others?
Well, Calgary-Winnipeg is going to be just maybe the best series, I think. It's evenly matched, really two teams that I think have a lot to prove based on the last couple playoffs they've been in. But over in the East, how can you go wrong with Montreal against Pittsburgh? Like, this has the potential to be the biggest upset, obviously, just because of the rankings. But, all it takes is a hot Carey Price and, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin could be going out in that qualifying round. So, the qualifying round's obviously, I think, going to be the best series or the best round of all four or all five rounds of the playoffs, but it's just got the potential for so many upsets, and that's the one. Like, if you're gonna pick a dark team, obviously Montreal is gonna be there. Maybe Chicago and that Blackhawks Oilers series is gonna be really good, where you got a young up and coming team against a veteran team that is trying to win maybe a fourth cup with that same core. But you can really go around the entire league and say, all of them are going to be interesting, just because we're talking best out of five, not best out of seven. And we're talking about playoff hockey after 4 months of a standstill.
You know, Mike, you mentioned the Montreal Canadiens, and I agree with you. I think that Habs-Penguins series is going to be, you know, one of the better series. I think they're all going to be great. I think you'd agree with that. But, you know, when you talk about the Habs, I think, you know, we all expected them to not be part of the playoffs, you know, pre-COVID-19, and that's why they, you know, traded Ilya Kovalchuk. And I thought that article that you wrote was really interesting. First off, I forgot that Ilya Kovalchuk was traded to Washington because it's been so long since we have seen NHL hockey on the ice. But, I mean, is Washington one of those teams maybe that is going to, you know, sneak under the radar? Because obviously they won the Cup a couple years ago. But, you know, when you talk about that Capitals team, they were a top team in the Eastern Conference the whole year. I think they were in third, if I'm not mistaken, in the conference, just a couple points behind Tampa Bay. But is that a team that maybe more people should be talking about as a Stanley Cup favorite up there with, you know, the Bostons and the Tampa Bays of the world?
I almost think that they're a better team than Boston or Tampa Bay. Like, their weak spot is in net when you look at how their stats shake down this year. Their goaltending really kind of let them down. At the same time, you've got a Vezina and a Stanley Cup winner and Braden Holtby, and you've got possibly the next big goaltender in Ilya Samsonov, who might be a little too young, but when you've got a tandem of a guy who's proven and a guy that, you know, is going to be the next great goaltender for Russia, that's a pretty good tandem. You know, Ovechkin is highly motivated to kind of add his name to kind of the Mount Rushmore of hockey. And by winning a cup, you could definitely do that. Now you've got Kovalchuk on your third line. John Carlson coming off a Norris Trophy worthy season. There are no holes in that lineup. And it's a team that's been there and done it. Obviously winning a cup 2 years ago. So yeah, they're almost my favorite coming out of the East, to be honest. The West is, when you look at it, it's way more wide open. Like anyone amongst the qualifying teams, I could see winning the cup, and then throw in Colorado and St. Louis in that mix. And really, you could pick names out of a hat to see who might be that final team. But, you know, when it comes to the East, I really like the Capitals' chances.
You know, Michael, nobody's complaining about having some CBA stability and not having to talk about the CBA for an additional few years. But one of the details that was just kind of coming to light recently was the eradication of fully operational team facilities during the summer. Now, you know, some folks are saying that's an anti-Toronto thing, but do you think that, like, is that kind of an unfair practice to have put in there? Because, I mean, if guys want to practice in the summer at the training facilities of their team, why shouldn't they be allowed to?
It always comes back to Toronto, I guess. Like, the Leafs have a couple of referees on the ice for a scrimmage this week, and, you know, the rest of the league gets word of it and cancels that. It just seems like Toronto's throwing around their financial muscle, and the rest of the league is just kind of shutting her down. But yeah, I think it's much ado about nothing. I don't see the whole fuss in it. At the same time, you know, I get where the league's coming from. They want to level the playing field as best they can. We saw what happened with the Coyotes, with just them working out prospects, and, you know, possibly gaining an unfair advantage. At the same time, if you look at the Coyotes' draft record, you'd say that they probably could use all the help that they can get. But yeah, I think it's much ado about nothing. And, you know, the less we talk about the CBA, I think moving forward, the better.
Michael, last question for you. We always appreciate your time and insight. If the Toronto Maple Leafs lose to the Columbus Blue Jackets, fill in the blank. Blank happens.
Oh, man. We could see another pandemic, I guess, guys. I don't know. No, you know what? I don't think Kyle Dubas is losing his job, but I think there's going to be a major roster overhaul if the Leafs, you know, lose in the qualifying round. I preface that by saying that just because of how wacky this postseason is, that I think a lot of GMs are getting free passes. Same time, let's be real, it's Toronto. Kyle Dubas has already tinkered with the roster, fired the head coach. I think if they go down to Columbus and it looks like they have a deficiency on defense, we could probably quite possibly see a guy like William Nylander get moved. If not, Kasperi Kapanen, Andreas Janssen, or, you know, maybe another big-time guy that you said, wow, he might not be the core, but he's not far outside that core. Because, well, let's face it, they've got three of the highest-paid players in the league in Matthews, Marner, and Tavares to go out in the qualifying round. It's inexcusable at this point.
Michael Tracos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. He's a good friend of the show. Michael, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us. It's nice to get back to talking about some hockey with you, buddy.
All right, guys. Anytime. And, yeah, can't wait. Like, hopefully there's no hiccups and we actually get a postseason.
2 weeks, T-minus 2 weeks, right? So let's fingers crossed that everything stays as copacetic as possible, and we get to see some hockey, some real hockey, and not some Leafs blue and white scrimmages with NHL officials.
All right, thanks again,
thanks,
guys.
Michael.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Michael Tracos from the Post Media. He's their national hockey writer. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the Calgary Flames, talk about what has been so far an interesting training camp in Calgary with a lot of, well, you can say controversy or at least question marks regarding the status of Johnny Gaudreau. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Dave, Ezzy with you. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's curious at best. There are some out there who wonder if there isn't some message sending being delivered to Johnny Gaudreau.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly right out of the gate before they get to the hub cities. And if that's the case, then maybe Johnny didn't spend enough time in the home gym as they were hoping in Calgary. But that's just speculation.
TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger talking about the mysterious circumstances regarding Johnny Gaudreau and his skating with the second group so far at Calgary Flames training camp.
By the way, Ezzy didn't spend any time in the home gym either, if that makes anybody feel
yeah,
better.
That has nothing to do with that's just expected at this point in time. Nobody has any doubts about that. But certainly some interesting circumstances in Calgary, eyebrows being raised. So Dreger comes on air and talks about that. And it's not in Darren Dreger's nature to sort of speculate wildly about a player and their physical fitness. But then Brad Treliving comes out a couple days ago, unprompted, unsolicited, and says it has nothing to do with conditioning, and it has nothing to do with a quote-unquote punishment that Gaudreau isn't skating up there with Monahan and Lindholm. So it's very interesting times in Calgary. Backlund back with the first group, I think, yesterday. And we'll have Kristen Anderson join us in about 10 minutes' time to get some more insight on the ground in Calgary. But things not smooth sailing to start, I would say, for the Calgary Flames in the beginning of their training camp 2.0.
Right, I agree. And you know, in regards to Brad Treliving and that press conference he gave, obviously, guys, I mean, Wes Gilbertson wrote about this too. I mean, he obviously didn't want to have to address this. But the thing is, going back to what we were talking about with Mike Tracos, we don't know if you know, Johnny Gaudreau skating in the first group has anything to do with COVID-19, right? It could, not saying that he has COVID-19, because obviously he wouldn't be practicing at all, but we don't know if it has something to do with it at all, because there's no disclosure.
Like Pasternak in Boston, who was in contact with somebody who might have been in contact, blah, blah, blah.
But it wouldn't really make sense. Like, what I was thinking about it is it wouldn't really make sense that he would be skating with other players. Mm-hmm. Like, he wouldn't be skating with players at all if they had any reason to keep him out, right? So I don't think it is COVID-19 related, but I think the point is, guys, and I went back and I looked at, you know, that Flames Avalanche series, obviously, because, you know, it's important because the Jets are playing them. And Johnny Gaudreau only had one assist. He had no goals. And Sean Monahan wasn't that good in that series either. He only had one goal and one assist. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that goal came in the Calgary win in that game one, because people forget Calgary won the first game 4-0. Then they lost to Colorado in overtime in game two, and then obviously Colorado outscored them. I think it was 14-4 in those last three games, 6-2, 3-2, and then 5-1. So Colorado really spanked Calgary in those last three games. But the point is, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, they weren't really good in that series. And actually, Sam Bennett, I had to go back and look. Sam Bennett led the Flames in scoring in that series. He had one goal and four assists. So, I mean, you just don't expect Sam Bennett to be leading your team in scoring. You expect it to be, you know, either, you know, Elias Lindholm, Gaudreau, Monahan, maybe Matt Tkachuk, who, you know, was pretty good. I think he had 3 points in that series. So, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau is a key player, if not the key player. Obviously, you know, whether it's Cam Talbot or David Riddick, the goaltending is going to be, you know, a huge factor for the Flames as well. But the Flames have absolutely no shot in this series if the big boys aren't producing. And we know that the Jets are going to come out flying. To me, this series is all about the Jets offense versus the Flames defense. Because I think the Jets can really go toe-to-toe with any team in the NHL. The Jets' big guns, we've talked about it, 5 20-plus goal scorers. And the Jets arguably have the, you know, the best top six wingers in the entire league. So I think the Jets' firepower, and the Jets obviously have the edge in goal, is going to be the key. But, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau has to be better. You just can't have a 99-point player score 0 goals in 5 games in a playoff series.
Well, you know, if we were doing this show last Saturday, and we were talking about the Flames, all the conversation would be about their goaltending. Because that's the big question. Is it going to be Cam Talbot? Is it going to be David Riddick? Mm-hmm. How's the goaltending going to do? How are they going to match up against Connor Hellebuck, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? We're not talking about their goaltending right now because we're talking about their best player, or one of their best offensive players, in Johnny Gaudreau, who didn't have a great year, isn't skating with
his...
We
should mention he was better in the second half.
Better in the second half.
He did start to come along, but you're right. I mean, he, like, 99 points was 2 years ago. I think most people know that, but, you know, this year I think he was on pace for something like 70 to 75 points.
Which is a pretty good drop. Which is, you know, a 25-point drop, give or take. And he's not skating with his regular line mates yet, and I would expect that by the time next Saturday rolls around, or the play-in series begins, he's going to start being with his regular line mates. But I don't think it's great for the Flames that the topic of conversation is about their superstar forward who didn't have a great year to begin with, Dave.
Well, to the point you made in the first hour about how the Jets have no very interesting storylines. Everything is very even for the Jets right now. In Calgary, it seems like it's the opposite. And you know, because of the way things are, you know, portrayed based on the separation of the two groups and the fact that you really can't say much, and, the, you know, obviously Brad Treliving came out and said and made a big statement because he had to.
Yep.
I mean, do you really think the GM wants to come out and have to make that sort of emphatic declaration? Of course not. Because
when you have the TSN insider speculating about it, you know that you have to address it.
Well, that's right. And but my point is, and what I think Drew is getting towards, is just that idea that this is not what you want the focus of your team to be. Now, lots of times, teams will say, we don't pay attention. We're not focused on that. That's you guys. Yeah. We focus on what's happening on the ice. But the reality is, on the ice, you have one of your best players who's not currently with the rest of the group.
Yeah, cool.
So that, to me, is, I mean, again, could you imagine what it would be like in Winnipeg if Patrick Laine or Nikolai Ehlers was in group one?
It would be
insane.
It would be
a gong
show.
It would be chaos, which is why you understand why it's such a big deal
in
Calgary.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned Travis Hamonic. First of all, I mean, nobody on this show or station has any problem with it, and pretty much nobody should have a problem with it, because the reason Travis Hamonic is not playing is for family reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if anybody holds that against him, I'm telling you right now, that's completely unfair.
You need to get your priorities in check.
Oh, absolutely. Family comes first. And when you're talking about that, though, that's a key defenseman. I realize that Hamonic's stats were not good this year, especially the advanced stats. I realize that advanced stats say that he's more of a third-pairing defenseman than a second-pairing defenseman, but the point is, Hamonic would have been part of the Flames' top six defensemen. So that's a key loss for them. Yes, did they go out and acquire Eric Gustafson? That's going to help. And, you know, Rasmus Anderson, I think, is a pretty underrated defenseman. But Hamonic was a guy that was going to play key minutes in a shutdown role for the Flames, whether it's on the second pair or third pair. So I agree with you guys when you consider that, you know, you have a player of Hamonic's stature not playing, and then you throw in Johnny Gaudreau not skating with the top line. I mean, these are the types of things that you definitely wish weren't the case. But I think as training camp proceeds, and we'll talk to Kristen Anderson, as you mentioned, Drew, Johnny Gaudreau is going to be back with that top line sooner rather than later. I mean, it's just a matter of time.
I agree.
He's a top line guy.
Yeah, of course. There's no question that he's, I mean, if he's going to be playing in the play-in series, and there's no reason to think that he's not going to be playing at this point, he will be on that top line. But the question is, to what extent, to what effectiveness, to what health, to what physical conditioning?
He's got to be,
let me ask you guys this. I mean, we heard the denial from Treliving. We heard what Dreger said at the opening of the clip. Do you think it's conditioning? And I know you don't know.
No, it's not conditioning. I mean, first off, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau is an elite. Like, when I went back to last year and I was talking about, you know, the no goals and the one assist, I like Johnny Gaudreau. Johnny Gaudreau is a really good player. Like, he's an elite player. But he wasn't good in that series against Colorado. And when you're going up against Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen and Gabe Landeskog and all these really good players, you can't have a guy like Johnny Gaudreau off his game, right? So, and I'm not saying that, you know, the reason why the Flames lost was because of Johnny Gaudreau not producing, but it was part of it. And when you don't have Sean Monahan firing on all cylinders, I mean, Matthew Tkachuk, I thought, was the best forward for the Flames in that series. But you can't just have, you know, one or two guys going. You need your big boys going, just like the Jets or any other team. So I do think he is going to be a factor in the series. I don't expect Johnny Gaudreau, you know, to be a non-factor, but if the Flames have any chance of winning, and if they do end up winning, which I don't think they will, I think the Jets are the better team, Johnny Gaudreau will have a big hand in that, and you can expect that he's going to score a few goals if the Flames do end up winning the series.
Let me tell you why I do think it is a bit of a message sending from the Flames organization. The way the sausage gets made, and this is true of all insiders in most...
And you've made sausage before.
It's true, yes. In all sports, is that most of their information comes on a deliberate leak from somebody within the organization, or somebody, you know, 1 degree away from the organization,
a whistleblower.
Sure, if you want to use that terminology. So if Dreger's going on air and he's saying that, you know, it appears, you know, based on some of the information that it might be a conditioning issue, I think he's getting that from somebody close to the Flames organization. And then Treliving comes out and gives plausible deniability, right, saying, you know, there's the cover. Here's the shot across the bow with Dreger's original statement. And then here's Brad Treliving with the plausible deniability.
Well, a team using media to send a message?
Exactly right. That's, it's not unprecedented by any stretch of the imagination.
I was going to say, it really doesn't take a big leap to think that is, you know, could be happening, because we know that happens all the time.
And I just wanted to
real
say
quick,
here,
Ezzy, we got Chris.
I know we're right up against the break here, yeah, but you know, one thing that I don't think has been talked about enough is the future of Johnny Gaudreau in Calgary. He's got 2 years left on his contract, guys. I think he's making around, what is it, six seven five, which I think you could argue he's a little bit underpaid, but that's not the point. The point is that, you know, there were some rumors out there, yeah, you know, prior to the season putting on pause. He's from the New Jersey area.
Yes.
So there were always those rumors out there that Calgary might trade him, and especially with the salary cap staying at $81 million, you know, you wonder what his future is. I'm not saying, and I'm not going to speculate that, you know, Johnny Gaudreau is going to be traded, you know, and then, you know, after, you know, the playoffs, but there is that, you know, that question mark, you know, with Matthew Tkachuk, you know, and some of these other players also taking up a big portion of the cap. You know, you wonder, you know, depending on what happens if the series, if that factors in at all, or if they've already made their mind that, you know, they're going to trade Johnny Gaudreau at some point. But there is that to factor in, that, you know, with 2 years left on that contract, you wonder if they're already thinking ahead to when that contract's up, and, you know, whether they want to sign him long term, because he's still relatively young. Johnny Gaudreau, what is he, 27? Yeah, 26. So, I mean, he's going to, you know, have another payday coming to him.
When we come back, we head out to Calgary. Kristen Anderson covers the Flames for Post Media there. She joins us for the latest on Flames training camp. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Dave, Ezzy, we're live with you Saturday morning. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We're in Dave's beautiful living room where there's a nice serenity pond outside. So if anybody gets a little bit too heated as the show goes on, they go take a nice breath, a little listen to the is it a babbling creek or
a creek? I got a waterfall.
You got a little bit of water feature, yeah, down there.
I've never been in a 10,000 square foot house before, so it's just, you know, the tennis court and, yeah, you know, the golf course. It's just really impressive.
It was nice of you to
give more of an estate.
It was nice of you to give the butler the day off, though. Yeah, day. Yeah. That was, yeah. That was very.
Otherwise, you guys would start expecting to be served. I didn't want that.
No, nobody wants that. We're trying to get a hold of Kristen Anderson of the Calgary Herald and Post Media to join us to talk about the Flames. We'll hopefully bring her to you momentarily. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So you mentioned the Flames and the goaltending situation as we're trying to get a hold of Kristen Anderson, of course. And, you know, nobody's quite sure who their number one goaltender is. And I saw a tweet earlier in the week from one of the Flames reporters, and quoting Flames head coach Jeff Ward, "We'll go with the guy who's playing the best out of training camp," which, I mean, isn't surprising to speak of because there is no clear-cut number one there. But how concerning is that, you know, the old adage goes, if you have two number one goalies, you really don't have a number one goalie.
Right, and, you know, there's no doubt that Cam Talbot had the better numbers this year, even though, you know, David Rittich played more games. But the point is that, you know, right now, they are one of those teams similar to Edmonton. I mean, similar to many teams. Vegas, who's the number one goalie in Vegas? I mean, I would say it's Robin Lehner, but Marc-Andre Fleury has all of that playoff experience.
Well, when we had Jesse Granger on the Zoom cast, however, was that about a month ago, or give or take, he said that he expects Fleury to get the start, and it's almost like a veteran prerogative, or not that Leonard's a young goaltender at this stage in his NHL career, but he expects Fleury to get the start, and then if he's not able to go, or if there's a struggle there, then they have Leonard to come in as a backup. I think when you have Leonard and Fleury, you actually do have two number one
That's
goalies.
Right. Yes.
When you have Talbot and Rittich, you don't really have two number one
goalies.
Well, I don't
know about that, Drew. I mean, like Cam Talbot, obviously, you know, had the one really good year for Edmonton. And then, you know, his numbers suffered a little bit over the last few years. But David Rittich is a guy that I think at times has looked like a number one goaltender. But I agree with you in the sense that Robin Lehner and Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, that's arguably the best 1-2 punch in the entire league. And that's why I think a lot of people are picking Vegas to go far, myself included. I picked them, you know, to go all the way before the season started.
What happens to our preseason predictions? Do they just get taken off the board?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they can count anymore.
I mean, I think you have to throw those out because when you have a four-month pause in the season, I mean, and we talked about this when we were doing the Zoom cast, guys. I mean, there are going to be some upsets.
For sure.
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind there's going to be an upset in the play-in round. I just don't know which series that's going to be. Like, is it going to be in the Vancouver-Minnesota series? Is it going to be in the Nashville-Arizona series? Like, if Arizona beats Nashville, guys, is that an upset? I don't necessarily know that it is.
Although we're not going to throw them away if it ends up being a Tampa-Dallas final, because I think that was my prediction.
That was your prediction. So as long as your prediction stays...
Yeah.
Stays,
if my prediction remains accurate, then I'm going to be trumpeting it.
You're going to be crow... Is that a...
Trumpeting it, same thing.
I know. Okay. I wasn't sure if you were making a pun there using the word trumpet.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Trumpet.
Nope. Just,
no.
Nope.
Dave was listening to big puns.
I'm not a musically inclined person, but I mean a trumpet.
Yeah. You don't play any musical instruments?
I don't see
anything around here. No keyboards?
No.
Dave's played the glockenspiel before.
What about a xylophone? Nothing?
Nope. No, I tried my hand at DJing. That's about it.
Drew, hang on a second.
Beep, beep, beep.
Back this up.
I was just kidding.
Because there was a party I went to once, and I think you guys may have been there, where one Michael Remus was performing.
DJ Remus?
DJ Remus was performing, and let me tell you, that was not a good party to be at.
I'm pretty sure what Remus did is he put a bunch of songs on an iPod and then put together like this pretty much actually what we've got in front of us, and just stood there, and it's like, Remus, you're hitting forward.
No, I'm going to, you know what, I'm going to stand up for Remo here, because I remember that. By the way, that was some type of like a loft party in the Exchange District, and Remus actually had quite a few girls around him because that was after Leah, and I remember thinking to myself, like, Remus, you better get some of these girls away. Leah's not going to like this too much, but he was actually doing a pretty good job. But like you said, I mean, he was just basically playing off of an iPad.
Oh, I guess I should qualify. I actually didn't go to Remus's little show. Sorry.
He actually had a show?
Well, whatever Ezzy's talking about.
I don't know what Ezzy's talking about.
It's like somebody's birthday party that was Exchange District.
I vaguely remember it, but yeah, I wasn't. Didn't waste my time.
Well, there you go. And we totally digressed badly there. You know, the goaltending for the Flames is I think, to me, the still the biggest unknown. I mean, assuming Goudreau gets back to being, you know, being on that top line and everything else, you know, that goaltending, if it's not at least equal to Connor Hellebuck.
Which it won't be, most likely.
Right, so I don't know how the Flames win the series if they don't at least match Connor Hellebuck in goaltending.
And they won't, and I agree with Dave. I mean, if the Flames end up beating the Jets, I don't think it's going to be because Cam Talbot steals two or three games. At least, I wouldn't expect that. I would be shocked. I really would be shocked, because there's no reason to think that will happen. I think it's going to be because the Calgary Flames outgun the Jets. That's the only way I think they beat the Jets, and that's why I think that this series is the Jets' offense versus the Flames' defense. And, you know, Mark Giordano and TJ Brody, that's an excellent top pair. And then you've got Noah Hanifin, and it's probably going to be Rasmus Anderson, I imagine, on that second pair. Eric Gustafson was acquired from the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah. They would love to have him now against the Edmonton Oilers in their play-in series. But, I mean, when you're talking about those matchups, I mean, Calgary's got great defense, but I just don't see, you know, the goaltending being in their favor. I agree. I expect it to be Cam Talbot. We'll ask Kristen Anderson what she thinks, but there's a big advantage for the Jets there.
Let's ask Kristen Anderson. We'll go to break. When we come back, Kristen's going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. More discussion about the Jets and Flames play-in series coming up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. 2 weeks from today, the Jets and the Flames will get their play-in series underway. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio from Training Camp 2.0 is available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media in Calgary, she covers the Calgary Flames. She's a good friend of the program. Kristen Anderson joins us on the line. Kristen, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. It's happening. Finally. we're back.
Doesn't it feel good? Isn't it nice to finally have something to write about and something to talk about and to talk about Johnny Gaudreau and why he is where he is or why he isn't where he isn't and actually, you know, really get back into the nuts and bolts of hockey talk.
Yeah.
It does feel good, doesn't it, Kristen?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. I think that this week felt so normal for so many people around the organization. Especially just being at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, it was, different, obviously. We're this new normal term that everybody's so sick of, but it's really true. I mean, getting your temperature taken before getting into the rink, wearing a mask at all times, obviously no fans, which we'll be, trying to get used to when the games actually do start. Interim head coach Jeff Ward said, yesterday when we were talking to him on the WebEx call that, like, it just felt normal to be back at the rink and their meetings are the same times. The players are skating again. There's, obviously a lot that goes into them actually getting on the ice, but, I think once they're actually on the ice, it certainly feels like, hockey's back, in this, unprecedented time and totally unique situation. And that was the big conversation this week is why the groups were grouped the way that they were. Johnny Gaudreau wasn't with his top line mates, Sean Monahan and Elias Lindholm. They were in the first group, and Johnny Gaudreau was in the second group, which wasn't really a Black Ace kind of taxi squad looking group. So it raised a ton of questions. Obviously, it was something COVID testing related or potential secondary exposure. The good news is players obviously can't come into the rink if they have tested positive, which they do. They test them on a daily basis. And also if they're symptomatic, of course. So the chance that they actually have COVID at this point is very, very, very low. But I think that there was a few days of not knowing what was happening, in terms of the groupings. And of course that sparked speculation. And then Brad Treliving came out and was talking about it and, wanted to squash any rumors of, his players being out of shape or Johnny Gaudreau specifically being out of shape. And I don't think that's the case at all.
To your comments there, Kristen, when do you expect then that Johnny Gaudreau will be back with, his regular line mates, or do you think there's a possibility he won't be back with his regular line mates between now and 2 weeks from now when the play-in series begins?
Oh, he will. I have no doubt in my mind that he'll be back with Sean Monahan and Elias Lindholm. They've played together for so long now. Elias Lindholm obviously joining that group last year when he came over in the trade from Carolina. I think that there's no way you're going to see them separated at any point. I think, Jeff Ward kept talking about these circumstances that dictated them splitting up the groups the way that they were. I think that it'll happen probably as soon as tomorrow. They're scheduled to have a scrimmage later in the evening, so kind of mimicking what they would face when the action actually does start in terms of the game times and game preparations. I think we'll see kind of a reuniting of the trio tomorrow, in my mind. Of course, there's Dylan Dubé and Buddy Robinson who haven't participated at all in the training camp process since it started on Monday. So you can only imagine that those two players, there's either an injury happening or it's a COVID-19 situation there. So that kind of adds some, you know, Dylan Dubé specifically was a regular in the NHL lineup. So that may add some question marks in terms of the lineup. But I would assume that the lines are going to look very close to what they did when the season went on pause on March 12th. And that, of course, features Matthew Tkachuk on the second line with Michael Backlund and Andrew Mangiapane, who is in the second group as well. And then the third line with Milan Lucic, Derek Ryan. Although Derek Ryan has been missing from practice the last couple of days, he tried to skate. I would assume it's an injury type situation. You know, if he's able to skate, maybe it's not that serious. So, but then again, there might be an opening on the third line. Who knows? And then, yeah, I think that the lines are going to be quite similar to what you saw on when the season was on pause on March 12th for sure.
Kristen, I imagine there's a lot of talk out there in Calgary about the goaltending, Cam Talbot and David Rittich. So instead of asking you who you think is going to start Game 1 versus the Jets, if it's going to be Talbot or Rittich, I just wanted to ask you more so about Cam Talbot's living situation with Milan Lucic and whether you think Milan Lucic is also reading to Cam Talbot's twins over FaceTime or if you think it's just Talbot reading to his... I'm obviously joking, but I thought that was funny that it came out that Cam Talbot was living with Milan Lucic and he drove from Ontario to... from Alberta to Ontario in early May because his son has asthma and he didn't want to take him via plane, but... Do you think it's Cam Talbot all the way for the Flames?
You know, it's such an interesting question. If you asked me at the beginning of the season, I would have said David Rittich all the way at the beginning of the year. He was heading into camp. Of course, the kind of the guy that they thought that would take it over as number one. The good thing about having two NHL caliber goaltenders now, you know, there were so many questions about David Rittich. Was he going to be able to handle the full season? Was he going to be able to handle, like, number one minutes? And I think that those questions, for the most part, were answered. But Cam Talbot quietly worked on his game and eventually just, you know, just kind of improved and tried to get back to basics when it came to, you know, his confidence and just feeling good in net. And then all of a sudden when David Rittich was struggling, Cam Talbot came in and, you know, was arguably kind of surpassed him as the number one goalie. And heading into playoffs, it looked like potentially, Cam Talbot was going to be the guy that they were going to lean on down the stretch. Now, to me, I think the slate is wiped clean. I think that they both know the body of work that either of them can produce. And I think that's an advantage for the Flames because they have two capable goaltenders. I think maybe last year in playoffs, it was Mike Smith all the way. You know, he wanted the net and he was, actually quite good during playoffs. But I don't know how David Rittich would have responded in the face of adversity of the playoffs. So now they have these two guys that are battle tested in some ways. I mean, obviously Cam Talbot more than David Rittich. But I mean, to me at this point, it's not like it's a Winnipeg situation where you have, Connor Hellebuck and he's your bona fide number one guy, obviously. To me, it's a little bit of a battle. Like this is the most intriguing battle of training camp to me is the battle in the net between David Rittich and Cam Talbot. And I think at this point, you know, we haven't seen Cam Talbot with the main group yet. He's just been with, you know, obviously good shooters and Mark Jankowski and Andrew Mangiapane and, NHL guys, in the second group, and Milan Lucic, as you mentioned. So, I mean, it's tough to say once, you want to see a scrimmage type situation. And even then you can't really, I don't know if you can really, we can really gauge what it's going to be like when the puck actually drops on, for the Flames in exhibition against the Edmonton Oilers on the 28th. And then of course against the Winnipeg Jets. So, and it's, as far as reading bedtime stories goes, well, Milan Lucic has two daughters and was dressing up in makeup and like during quarantine. He's got a son too, but his son's a little bit younger, so I'm assuming that he would play into whatever the kids wanted. So he's a pretty good sport.
Kristen Anderson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Kristen covers the Calgary Flames for Post Media in Alberta.
You know, Kristen, it's interesting because, you know, there's only so much you can really gain from a scrimmage. And so obviously all teams are playing one exhibition game, but I suspect most coaching staffs, you know, Paul Maurice was talking about it. All the guys, you know, unlike in generally in exhibition games, all players are going to be playing, you know, in the one game that they have. But they obviously don't want, they're probably going to try and wrap them a little bit of bubble wrap, you know, obviously not wanting anybody to get hurt ahead of the play-in series. How do you do that in the Battle of Alberta? Because to me, even though, you know, you don't want your guys to get hurt, that just seems like Calgary and Edmonton, when they get together, you know, it's hard to just kind of keep it safe. So do you see that as going to be a full-blown game? Like they're just going to go out, you know, the way they normally do? Or do you think it's just going to be, we got to be careful, we got to be smart, we got Winnipeg coming, you know, a few days later?
It's such an interesting question. I asked that to Rasmus Anderson actually too, and he didn't really know, because this ultimately is serving a purpose for them, for both teams, in terms of preparing them for, you know, this all of a sudden 0-100 situation against the Winnipeg Jets. Kind of everything's on the line. But I would, you know, I guess if I'm a player, I would want that type of competition. Like, you know, we were talking to Mark Giordano the other day, and I was talking to him about the pace of scrimmaging, because there is so many young guys on this team, like in their group of 31 or however many it is right now. They have a lot of younger players from the Stockton Heat. So, and he was saying, like, we got to tell the young guys, like, they can't be afraid to hit us. They can't be afraid to, like, battle in the corners and make it tough on us, because we need to prepare as much as the next guy. So, you know, like, he was talking about how during training camp, when he first came to the Flames, like, felt like he was going to open ice hit Iggy, but there was a bit of, you know, trepidation when it came to battling with Jerome McGinley in the corners, you know, or some, you know, a star player. If you're a young kind of up and comer in the league, you don't want to ruffle any feathers. But I think that that's a good thing. You know, you got to use caution. You know, use your judgment, obviously, in certain situations. So I would assume that parts of the game are going to be a little bit tentative against the Edmonton Oilers. There's no room right now for all of that Matthew Tkachuk, Zach Cassian back and forth. You know, you're going to see a hard hitting game, I would think. Both teams they play that way. But I don't see the shenanigans that would, you just can't afford it, right? Like you just can't afford injury. Like you were saying, you can't afford, you know, you can't afford any, like, kind of stupid stuff, essentially. So these exhibition games, on one hand, are to prepare them, to get them ready to play at the pace of what the play-in round is going to be. But at the same time, you know, at the end of the day, it is an Battle of Alberta. So who knows? You might see a little bit of that back and forth, but maybe not what it was in January, let's say.
Last question for you, Kristen. Kristen Anderson of Post Media in Calgary is our guest. You know, you mentioned Matthew Tkachuk, and we know that he's a guy who feeds off, you know, getting under his opponent's skin, and he feeds off the energy in the of the crowd. With no crowd in attendance, you know, do you think that his game might take a little bit longer to get back to quote unquote normal than some other guys who sort of maybe block out some of the surrounding noise?
Well, that's another good question. Like, you know, and I think a lot of players are interested in what it's going to be like without any fans and the crowd noise and, you know, anticipation. And Mark Giordano had an interesting comment when I was speaking with him on Friday that, you know, it might be kind of like the Heritage Classic in a lot of ways, because not in the sense, like he said, the crowd was unbelievable that night, of course, but it was almost like a delayed reaction when it came to scoring goals and big plays. Just because they were so far away from the fans and the dynamics and the acoustics of Mosaic Stadium were so different. I don't know. I mean, for Matthew Tkachuk's game, yes, it's so dependent you know, momentum, and that's kind of where he gets his, like, he seems to get better as he gets more into it and, like, starts to get a little bit more, you know, agitated, like, agitating guys. And, but at the same time, his mindset, like, he's a really smart player. That's kind of the factor about Matthew Tkachuk that goes a little bit unnoticed and unrecognized is that he is so smart when it comes to, you know, positionally where he needs to be and, you know, being in front of the net. I don't think it's going to affect his game in terms of his intensity level, and he's still going to want to get under the skin of the Winnipeg Jets, but I think it's an interesting concept, this no fans, like how, you know, Mark Giordano was saying, like, visually, the puck might get lost in the seats, you know, depending on what color the seat colors are. And, you know, they have to, like, think about the, yeah, like, the intensity and the anticipation. And it's going to be a fascinating experiment. You know, you can't replace that crowd noise. You know, Mark Giordano was talking about playing in front of the sea of red and you know, walking out in playoff time. And, you know, that will all be missing, of course, you know, for both sides. But it's just this new concept. It's going to be strange to see, you know, the pace and how that is affected by the crowd noise.
It gets underway 2 weeks from today, two Saturdays from now. The Flames and the Jets will do puck drop in their return to play series. Kristen Anderson will cover it for Post Media in Calgary. Kristen, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Kristen.
Thanks,
take
Kristen.
Care. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Brian Engblom is going to join us for an update from Tampa Bay Lightning training camp and what is certainly the mess in Florida as it pertains to COVID. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. 2 weeks from today, you know it, the Jets and the Flames, they're going to get underway in their play-in series. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio from training camp 2.0 is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours, Brian Engblom, covers as an analyst for the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning are going to be involved in the round robin portion of the return to play along in the Eastern Conference. Brian, thanks so much for joining us Saturday morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing fine and dandy. Well. Thank you, Brian. I always appreciate your time and, you know, obviously wanted to get your insights into the first week or so of Tampa Bay Lightning training camp 2.0. You know, do you think the training camp is different for the teams that are involved in the round robin series versus the teams that are involved in the best of five do or die play in part of the return to play?
The training camps themselves, no. I don't think so.
The approach, maybe. The approach they have to take.
Yeah, well, the coaching staffs, I think, follow similar guidelines. These guys talk a lot to each other. I found that really interesting. John Cooper, and I kind of knew it, but John Cooper talked about it the other day. He said during the break, he said they did a lot of Zoom calls and a lot of phone calls with a lot of coaches around the league. They exchange ideas, you know, and philosophies and all kinds of stuff. I think a lot more than coaches did in the old days, who kind of, you know, kept more to themselves, maybe had a friend or two, right, that they confided in. But I think they share a lot of philosophies and a lot of stuff now. So I think that getting prepared for the camp and the way that they conduct the camps are going to be very similar. But heading into the exhibition game and then, you know, the round robin part, obviously you don't have to worry about the results as much. Yeah. You know, for the Lightning in the top four in the East and the West, they don't have to worry about the results of those first couple of games. It just will make a difference, obviously, who they play when the real playoffs start. But the other teams certainly have to get geared up right away. I mean, you know, it's no secret. Everybody talks about it, and it's right there in front of you. You get off to a bad start, and you lose game one in your playoff series, best of five, and you haven't played in a long time, and now your anxiety level goes right up to the top. So, yeah, there is certainly a difference in that respect and how you get ready for that first game and, you know, what happens after that. So there's a big difference in that respect. And you know what? That's the way it should be. If the top four teams in the East and West, they deserve to have the equivalent almost of a bye, right, in the old days because of the record that they had during the regular season. That's the way I feel anyway.
Brian, obviously the big news at a Lightning training camp just a couple days ago was that Steven Stamkos was out there practicing with the power play unit, and previous to that he had only been skating on his own. And obviously we know that, you know, Steven Stamkos is a key player for the Lightning, and he will be in the round robin and once the first round starts. But wanted to ask you about last year, and obviously, you know, a very disappointing end to the season, you know, for the Lightning being swept in that first round. But do you think Steven Stamkos is maybe one of those players that took it the hardest, considering that, you know, he's only played for one team, he's been with the Lightning, you know, for over a decade? Not to say that other players on the Lightning and in the organization didn't take it hard, but in your opinion, is he maybe the one guy that's going to play with, you know, the biggest chip on his shoulder during this year's playoffs?
Yeah, it's hard to equate all that. I think that's, you know, talk around the league and on shows that we all do and shows that you guys do, you start talking about guys who are, you know, at the upper echelons, like Steven Stamkos says, because of their individual accomplishments, those guys who haven't won yet, quote unquote, right? And he's certainly one of them. So is that in the back of his mind? Yes. You know, some of the injuries he's had, I would think that he knows he's coming down the last few years in his league at his top level. And that, of course, he knows he's on a terrific team that has a chance to win. And we all know what happened last year. It was devastating for all of them. And when you have a historic season and go out four straight, don't even win a game, it becomes part of your DNA. And that's never going to leave. But, and they know they've had to answer those questions all season. They're going to have to answer them again as soon as the playoff round starts here in Toronto for them. There is no doubt they're going to keep bringing up last year. And they will continue to say what they always have: we're just looking forward, not back. But is it in your mind and in your DNA? Absolutely. And it spurs you on. It gets you it gives you that heightened sense of awareness that I think is so necessary. It's borderline, you know, you don't want to be overly nervous and uptight and lose your game. But also, you have to realize when you've lost a series like that, when you are that good a team, how quickly it can all fade away and turn into a disaster. So I think that for Steven and for everybody on that team last year, they're well aware of what can happen, and they are going to do everything they can, obviously, to not let it happen again.
You know, Brian, for the round robin teams, the exhibition game is probably less impactful than it would be for the teams that, you know, are going into the play-in series. But as a former NHL player, you know, exhibition games, you know, weren't necessarily the best things guys wanted to participate in. But how difficult is it going to be to play? You know, you want to play at a top level, but you also got to be careful because you don't want to get injured in advance of the series. So, you know, for a team like Tampa, it's a little different, obviously, than a team like the Jets. But how do you think a player has to approach that exhibition game?
It'll be a lot about systems and your game feel. You're going to have a lot more contact, obviously. Your legs are going to get torn up a little bit more. I think you're going to get a lot more sense individually. Each player is going to come out of that first game and go, okay, I thought I was in better shape, but now I feel like, oh, yeah, I'm really tired. That got to me a little more than I expected. Or, you know, they're going to be measuring themselves. These guys know exactly where they should be and how they should feel in every game. So individually, that's what I would be thinking about if I were a player. What the coaches are looking at is, I'm at practice right now. They're just finishing up today. And they are working on, you know, more individualized things. They did a lot of power play today and penalty killing. They also did a lot of face-off structure, offensive zone, defensive zone, all the things that, you know, you work at. And they've had to really pile them on top of each other, I think. So getting that feel down and making sure you're in the right place on the ice, there's a difference. It's an old, I don't know who first came up with it. There's a difference between feel and real. And I think that's a great expression. You have to get real in that preseason game, exhibition game, whatever you want to call it, and move forward from there using it in their next three games before the playoff round starts.
Brian Engblom is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Brian is an analyst for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Brian, we talked about the disappointment of last season with the Lightning going out to the Blue Jackets, and that's really going to be a topic of discussion until the Lightning at least win one game in the playoffs or in the round robin part.
Yeah.
Is there a player specifically on the Lightning roster in your mind that, you know, can prevent that from happening again, from prevent those doubts from creeping in, who's been through the battles in the NHL? Is there one guy in particular who maybe can be a good barometer for how the team is feeling in the round robin portion and then when the playoffs themselves actually begin?
Interesting question. One player to prevent that. You know what? Off the top of my head, this might sound funny. Pat Maroon, because of playing with St. Louis. And he's been a real valuable key guy for them this year because of playing with the Blues and what they accomplished compared to what happened to the Lightning. He's a funny guy. You know, he's kind of laid back, but of course he's really intense when the game is on. He also has not been afraid at all to, from what I understand, stand up in the locker room or even on the bench and go, what the hell is going on here? You know, like, let's go. Stop screwing around and, you know, be concentrating on the right things. This is a very skilled team that's won a heck of a lot of hockey games in the last 3 years in the regular season. And sometimes they certainly get in that mode, and it happened last year down the stretch. Leading into the playoffs, which I think was ended up being their demise. They skilled their way through so many games where they really didn't have any business winning the game. So I think Maroon has been really good about that. Like, hey, cut the crap, you know? So that's an important thing of getting a player. Coaches do it all the time, but you know, it starts to sound the same all the time coming from the coaching staff. When somebody on your team that's respected, and he is because of, you know, being a winner, I think it gets their attention even more sometimes in the room. Like, cut the crap. Let's go. Let's be doing the right thing here and be thinking about the right things and play with the right intensity in the right facets of the game before it gets away from you. So, interesting question, but yeah, the more I think of it, I would say it would be Pat Maroon.
You know, Brian, Dave touched on it earlier. You, of course, had a long career in the NHL. You know, won the Stanley Cups in 1978, 79, and 80 with the Montreal Canadiens, playing with some of the best defensemen that have ever played the game, such as Larry Robinson and, you know, Guy Lapointe, Serge Savard. I mean, you know the names. And, you know, when you look at the Lightning, Victor Hedman is arguably, you know, the best defenseman, if not, you know, a top three defenseman in the league. And, similar group of defensemen to last year, with Kevin Shattenkirk probably being the biggest addition to that back end. But when you consider that, you know, a guy like Eric Chernak, that was his first playoffs last year for the Lightning against the Blue Jackets, and, you know, you've got some familiar faces there. How do you think that defense is setting up going into the first round of the playoffs? Because obviously, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning are built, you know, from the net out with Andrei Vasilevsky. But when you look at that defense, are they going to benefit from going through that experience last year in the playoffs, especially a guy like, you know, Eric Chernak, who I think you would agree has turned out to be, you know, a really nice defenseman for the Lightning?
Yes. I think they have real solid defense, and they have 9 NHL defensemen here with experience. Chernak, you know, would be, and Sergachev would be the least experienced. But Chernak, you know, stepped in last year and did a hell of a job. And he just fell into lockstep with Ryan McDonagh. So they played virtually together since that time. And they're just really good. You know, it's a chemistry thing that no one really can, you know, answer the question. Like, what, you know, why does it work? It's kind of like putting forward lines together, right? But for me, in some ways, I think it's even more important to get the defense pairings that get in sync, because you make a mistake and don't read off each other correctly, you're giving up a scoring chance. You're going to give up goals really quickly. So Chernak just, you know, had that chemistry with McDonagh. McDonagh helped him a lot, because I think he's one of the smartest defensemen in the league, Ryan McDonagh. He reads extremely well, and he can read off of anybody, any partner that he has. I think he sees the ice better than nearly any defenseman in the National Hockey League. He sees what's coming at him, not just the opposition, but his own players, and cleans up a lot of messes that he doesn't get enough credit for on this team. But he and Chernak, and he allowed Chernak to be that big physical guy that can be really intimidating and helped him grow as a player. So those two have been a pair. The question coming in was who was going to play with Victor Hedman. And I thought maybe Shattenkirk would fill in that role early on. It didn't. It just didn't. He doesn't. Shattenkirk takes some chances at times. Victor Hedman is one of those guys that you don't want to turn a thoroughbred into a plow horse. You know, you let Victor Hedman do what Victor Hedman wants to do. He's smart enough to know how to play by the clock and the score, but he doesn't play an orthodox game, nor should he, because he's such an incredible skater and can swallow up plays defensively on the opposite side of the ice. And Shattenkirk is just not the type of player that reads off of that well. So Shattenkirk ended up playing with Sergachev, and that tandem just worked. Like, the tumblers fell into place there too, and it worked really well. And Sergachev has become, he's taken another step forward. I think he's really going to be a key in the playoffs here for the Lightning, because he finally started to understand, like, he's a big, strong boy. He's got tremendous skills, great feet, excellent hands, incredible wrist shot. He always wanted to make the play all the time. So Sergachev started to play with some physicality and taking, you know, making sure that he was playing well in the corners and in his own end, and was really, you know, physical. He ended up getting into pushing and shoving match with Shea Weber towards the end of the year, and you got to be careful with that. And also Zdeno Chara. So, you know, he was pushing the envelope there for sure. You got to be careful, because he's not exactly an experienced fighter. But he just, you know, he played with a little snarl, and it gave him a lot of confidence. So that pair with Shattenkirk and Sergachev is excellent too. And so then you've got Bogosian and Coburn and Luke Shen, you know, as the last three. So you get some injuries, you got guys with experience there.
I'll be honest, Brian, I completely forgot that Bogosian was on the Lightning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Well, he hasn't really played yet.
He's looked, he got to play the last eight games.
Okay.
Because of some injuries here. Hedman was hurt, McDonough was hurt, Ruda was hurt. Jan Ruda ends up, I shouldn't have, you know, left him out, busy talking about the other guys, but Jan Ruda, kind of interestingly too, comes over, you know, a couple of years ago now from Chicago, and falls right into place with Victor Hedman. So he's the one that ended up fitting in with Victor, because he just figured it out and because it worked. So there you go. But Bogosian has actually looked really good here in camp. And I think that he and Goodrow and Blake Coleman, which were the three guys that they obtained at the trade deadline, now have had a chance to really become Lightning players. They only got to play eight or nine games right before, you know, everything got shut down. But I know watching Bogosian just these last, you know, three, 4 days, I remember remarking to Rick Peckham, my partner, saying, hey, Bogosian's really playing well, looks a lot more comfortable. Yes, I know it's only drills and whatever, whatever. But, you know, you start somewhere, right? And he's playing with some authority. You can tell that he's feeling comfortable. And there's a good chance he's going to be in there somewhere along the line.
Brian Engblom covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's an analyst on their broadcast. Brian, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us. And enjoy, I guess, the round robin series, which will get underway in a couple weeks' time from now.
Yeah, thank goodness. I know. Finally, we got some hockey to talk about. I know everybody's starving for it. Thanks for having me on, guys, and enjoy these 12-hour days we're going to have watching hockey coming up just a couple of weeks. That's going to be something.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Brian. Good to talk hockey with you again.
Thanks very much, Brian. Take care.
All right, guys.
When we come back, one final segment Saturday morning, we're going to talk about the NHL's injury reporting protocol. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Insofar as players on the ice, injuries, pretty strict protocol here. My comments are going to be basically not fit to play on game days and not able to practice. And I wouldn't read anything into whether a player was on the ice or not necessarily as a COVID situation.
let the wild speculation continue. That's Jets head coach Paul Maurice from earlier this week talking about the NHL's new injury reporting protocol. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in Dave's living room. Beautiful living room that it is. Nice, comfortable couch we're sitting on. I got my feet kicked up. It's a nice way to broadcast, I must say. This segment of the show, the final segment, brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
I'm still blown away that I forgot Zach Bogosian was on the Lightning.
I'm not really that blown away by it. I mean, he's been fairly inconsequential as an NHL player for most of the last couple of seasons.
Well, he's been injured.
I was say, most of what I'm saying.
Yeah. Most people who play in Buffalo have been inconsequential players.
Exactly. Also, except for, what was the guy's name who had the rant?
Jack Eichel?
No, Jack Eichel. It wasn't Derek, the Sabres fan.
Dwayne. Wasn't it
Dwayne? Dwayne. Yeah. It was Dwayne, the Sabres fan.
I was away
fan.
For that show. Yeah. I was in Mexico for that show.
We were hoping that you would stay in Mexico, but you came back nonetheless.
I would love to stay in Mexico, but I love Winnipeg. When you're talking about, I remember
Sabres fan,
I was talking about the show with Dave, and he said, yeah, we talked about Dwayne, the Sabres fan. So I had no idea what he was talking about. And then I went back and listened to it, and it was one of the most epic rants
I've ever heard. Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, you can...
It's on YouTube.
It's on
Literally
YouTube.
Just type in Dwayne, the Sabres fan who goes on a rant.
Yeah, Sabres fan Dwayne. It's a great rant. Anyways, the NHL, the injury protocol reporting, it's always silly in the best of times. In the playoffs, it's always silly where they never really say anything, and it's upper body or it's lower body or,
mid-body.
Or whatever. Mid-body.
Body-body.
I mean, guy gets a leg chopped off, and all of a sudden he's got an arm injury. But this is even more ridiculous. I mean... Everyone expects that there's going to be players who are impacted by COVID. It's a reality.
It's inevitable.
It's inevitable. The NHL has made the decision. The NHLPA has made the decision that is a risk that they are willing to take to return to play. Their decision to make. You know, the people who are against the NHL from returning are going to have their opinion. They're entitled to it. There's a complete argument to be made for it. But to try and then bury the news and bury these injuries underneath some sort of veil of secrecy, some faux veil of secrecy, is just typical NHL making things more complicated than it needs to be.
Right, and I understand, why COVID-19 cases aren't going to be reported either on a team basis or an individual basis. I mean, it's been covered by the insiders and everybody else, really, at this point. The players didn't want it, right? So I get that. But to not disclose any of the injuries, to me, just begs the question. I mean, I guess it's going to just inevitably bring on speculation that any injury is going to be COVID-19, right? Like, so if a guy has a groin pull or something like that, and it's a minor groin pull, we have no idea because, like you said, we don't even have upper body or lower body anymore. All we have is this unfit to play business, so we're going to have absolutely no idea, what any player in the league is suffering from. So it's just unfortunate because I do think that we should at the very least know if it's an upper body or lower body injury, but it doesn't look like we're going to find out that information.
It certainly doesn't. That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Great to be back on air here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guest, Paul Edmonds, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster. We were joined by Michael Trakos, Kristen Anderson, and Brian Engblom. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on IllegalCurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job back at the studio. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.